There we are.
Hi, everybody. Welcome. Welcome, welcome. I'm seeing faces that couldn't get in last time that are getting in this time. That's good. Yay. There we go. There's live human beings because I was scrolling through seeing just names. Welcome, everybody. I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad that recording is firmly hit. We are recording this and we've got plenty of space. So we almost have everybody in. We have almost 300 people, which is great. I'm so glad I used the 500 person Zoom. I don't want to make that mistake again. All right. There we go. Welcome, everyone. I'm just going to wait just a couple more minutes. And I'm going to scroll through and see if I see any familiar faces or names. I already do. Yes. Yeah. Judith and Chuck, I see you. Oh, you little cutie pies. It's been a long time. Hi. Nice to see you here. Yeah, I remember you were on the Zooms with me through COVID. And hey, Carol. Hi. It's good to see you. Yeah, good to see you. Yes, sweetheart. Hi, everybody. Yeah, look at these faces. Thank you for having your faces on. I appreciate that. Kathy Wagner, look at that smile. Hi. Hi there. I feel like, remember, what was her name from Romper Room? I don't remember the teacher's name, Donna Maloney. I saw your name. It just flashed by. I feel like I need to get one of those mirrors, right? And go, hi. Hi, Pam. Hi, Elaine. I am definitely dating myself. And that's okay. I do remember being a little kid. So Romper Room, I think it was called Romper Room, right? And just shake your heads if anybody remembers. Yeah. Romper Room. And I remember watching it as a little girl. And this teacher would have like a magic mirror and she would say hi to people in the audience, which is interesting because when you think about that was actually quite brilliant back then. It was a very unusual use of television to try and create a personal connection with the audience. It was actually really clever on their part. And boy, did we used to sit at the TV praying that she would say our name, right? Yeah, I see some people laughing. Hi, Donna Johnson. Is Frost here with you? Okay, good. Good. All right, everybody. I'm so glad you're here. It's 3 o'clock. I'm going to get started because there's a lot to just sort of remind you of and to add. And then also I want to leave some time to be able to talk to some of you and to maybe do some coaching as well. So thank you everybody for being here. Thank you for your patience and your kindness for showing up again after the last Zoom. I have to say I was the good thing about that last Zoom was it was really wonderful to know that this topic was so important to a lot of people. It was inspiring to me, and it really helped me to think about and encouraged me to think about what I want to do in relation to exploring the wisdom years in the future. When I came away from that Zoom meeting, the big thing that I walked away with was there is this whole body of work, if you will, these conversations to be had that go far beyond what we typically think about, talk about, imagine when it comes to aging. I think I said on the last Zoom, there are billions of dollars spent on longevity, on trying to extend our lives. And there's so little conversation about the quality of that life. And if, like me, you've had parents that have gotten sick and died, and or loved ones of any age who have gotten sick, and you've watched people go through a long period of illness, let's say, or a long decline, you realize that the conversations that needed to be had about aging well, soul care really is what I think of it, needed to happen a long time ago. So it's really great that we're having this conversation now. And when I think about it, aside from longevity and health, which is what we all typically hear about, I'm thinking, I just jotted down some notes based on our last conversation. There's longevity and body care, but then there's soul care. And soul care can mean the relationship we have with ourselves, like cultivating a deeper, stronger relationship with the self, the relationship we have with our bodies, which isn't just how can I make this thing stay looking the same, acting the same, and operate for as long as possible. I mean, that's kind of insane, actually. The reality is we're all going to die, and the body's going to deteriorate over time. And so there's so much more to be spoken about in terms of body care, mobility. The environment that we live in, that we work in, that we spend our time in is a conversation to be had around soul care. Finances, we touched on that a little bit last time. What happens if you haven't saved money for retirement now? And like, what kind of financial self-care do we need as we get older? And then relationships, friendships, spousal relationships, partnerships. What happens when a spouse wants to retire and you don't want to? Or you've had the house to yourself for years and all of a sudden you don't anymore, right? These are the kinds of conversations that need to be explored. And that's what I'm thinking about when I think about doing a podcast, possibly. I'm toying with the idea of the right kind of format, the most useful and interesting and compelling format. I think podcast is one format. I also walked away from the Zoom last week thinking, wouldn't it be great to be able to do a live coaching session for like 30 minutes with somebody on Zoom and have people observe and learn from that session while they were while I was supporting somebody else, submitting questions ahead of time, looking at, what are the topics? And I would love for you to put any questions or topics that you find interesting related to exploring the wisdom years, because the wisdom years is a long time. And by the way, I got some emails from people saying it was very sweet. I'm 45 and I'm not in my wisdom years yet. And I'm thinking, you might be, or I'm 55 and I'm not in my wisdom years yet. I haven't gotten any, I'm 65 and not in my wisdom years yet. But there's the other conversation to be had, right? Like, when do we enter the wisdom years? And what do the wisdom years really mean? Well, you could be a really sharp cookie who, at the age of 35, I'm making this up, decided to go into therapy, has been doing a tremendous amount of healing work, and you could have more wisdom than people twice your age, right? In which case, you're in the wisdom years. So I am thinking, when I think about the wisdom years, I think about midlife and post-midlife. There's a lot that's been written and talked about in terms of midlife. And a lot of times, as much as we think aging has, the focus has been on longevity and health, for midlife, the focus is often on, okay, what are we going to do next in this next stage of our life? What kind of legacy am I going to lead? What kind of contribution am I going to make? How is my life purpose going to be updated or changed in some way, right? And the reality is that one of the big conversations that needs to be had as we get into our wisdom years, and this is true for all of us, I personally feel this way. And you're welcome to disagree with me because I love when people disagree with me. Then we can have interesting debates. But I would say that in our wisdom years, the one thing that is absolutely important is to recognize, and it just went right out of my head. How funny is that? Hold on. Hold on. Wow. And it was so important too. It's going to come back. Went right out of my head. I got distracted. So let me back up. So I was saying one of the things that's true going into our wisdom years is, and then I was talking about, we talk about life purpose. Stay with me, everybody, and I know you're all going to put ideas in the chat. But one of the things I do know is that at some point, what's true for all of us is we need to be focused on. Oh, okay, I got it. I knew it would come back. One of the things that's true for all of us is as we age, we need to begin to very consciously relax the doer muscles and engage the being muscles. Thank you. I see people going, I know I'm relieved. That's true for everybody. I mean, that's true for any age. It really becomes clear as we get older that, sometimes the doer muscles are taken out because we get sick, right? And we're not able to do as much as we used to. But one of the things that was clear in our last Zoom is that people are tired. And you do reach a point in life where you realize, I want the quality of my life to be more of interest to me than than production and efficiency and ambition and achievement, right? We live in a very, I think in Enneagram terms, this sort of three culture of like making shit happen. And at some point, you just get kind of tired of making shit happen, don't you? And you just actually want to enjoy the shit you've already made happen, right? It's kind of like how it goes. So that's the big conversation that we begin with, is looking at the doer versus the beer. And that is a big part of exploring the wisdom years. The other foundational piece of exploring the wisdom years that's really important is looking at the distinction between ego and soul. I said this the last time. The first half of our lives is really spent assembling a personality that carries us through life. And that personality is influenced in utero. So when your mom was carrying you in her belly, you were already being influenced. Then you're born and you're influenced by all of the authority figures and systems around you. And the personality begins to get formed. And that personality is going to carry you through life. There's nothing wrong with that. It's what we call the ego. There's nothing wrong with that. You actually need an ego in order to function in the world. The challenge becomes when you actually think that's who you are. When the reality is your soul, who's kind of put on a certain garment, use that garment to navigate through life. And if you're lucky, you'll reach a point at midlife-ish. For some of my clients, I see it happening around 45, but you'll reach a point where you'll start questioning, is this really what I want? Is this really who I am? What really matters to me here? I've been doing X, Y, and Z all my life, and it's not gotten me what I thought it was going to get me. Like, you start really questioning your life. I remember when Wayne Dyer put out his movie, The Shift. And that movie was all about from ambition to meaning. It was a brilliant, he was way ahead of his time. And he didn't even know it. And but he was creating something that he could personally identify with at that time. He was at that point in his life. And so for all of us, at some point we start to say, wait a minute, if I'm not the ego, who am I? And if you don't know what the answer to that is, and it's a very long, complicated, I mean, the simple form is you're a soul. Your essence is a powerful, creative, conscious force that's connected to everything and everyone. But if you're lucky at that second half of your life, you slowly start to dismantle the ego so that you can discover what's left behind. And that journey can be so beautiful and so exciting and so rewarding. And that's the journey I'm interested in. It's the one I've been on, and it's the one I'm in the, every day is is that journey for me. And I can tell you it's challenging and beautiful. And I feel the most connected to the beauty of life, in spite of the insanity that's going on right now, by the way, because of relaxing the doer muscles, building the beer muscles, and beginning to let go of the personality that served me pretty damn well in my life, I can tell you. But it's exhausting now. So, ego versus soul, these are like kind of foundational issues when it comes to exploring the wisdom years, learning to manage the mind. Now when I'm working with clients, and I do so just infrequently, one of the very first assignments I give every client, regardless of their age, is they need to be sit in silence 5 minutes a day and just become familiar with their mind. Like, I just want you to observe your mind. Notice what it does. How does your mind operate? Like, just imagine that you're observing this new friend. And sometimes it feels like an enemy, but like, just, observe the mind. That's a big foundational piece. I mean, honestly, I will tell all of you, if there were a way for me to hand you the consistent ability to be quiet and to practice presence, to balance silence with activity, your whole life would be completely changed. You wouldn't need anything else that I'm talking about. I promise you that's true. And if I could hand you that, I would. But it is a practice, and I think it's part of the reason we're in human form. So learning to manage the mind is another foundational piece. Peace is an inside job, as we've heard many times. It is not found outside of you. Many of us really, our mind would have us believe, the ego would have us believe that if I just think long enough, hard enough, in the right way, at the right things, I'll feel better. And none of that's true. None of it at all. Body care is important. Our bodies are the vehicle that carry us through life. And in exploring the wisdom years, we don't just want to look at, okay, how do you get this body to keep running for as long as possible? But it's really like, what does mobility mean to you? And what are ways that we can remain mobile and strong that are fun and pleasurable? One of the things I did mention, and Terry, maybe you could put that in the chat, getfitwithrick.com. It's a good example of that. This young man in Dubai who was a professional dancer who years ago started teaching people how to do walking workouts based on the size of a yoga mat out of his apartment. He now has members from all over the world. He has 10-minute, routines, 15, 20, 30. I think he goes up to an hour, and it's all walking, and it's based on protecting joints regardless of age. I have the most fun doing this guy's workouts. And I happen to be a gym rat, somebody with a gym in my home, and I lift weights, but I love how easy this guy's workouts are. You can do them anywhere. When it's snowing out, I can do them. And so, like, what do we do in order to keep mobility? As someone who's lost three people in the last year, I will tell you, your mobility is your key to everything as you age. It's the key to everything. It is not just how can I keep my body alive? It's your mental health, your joint health, your friendships are related to also your mobility. The cost of your health care is related to your mobility. The cost of other people's money paying for your health care is related to your mobility. The burden you will or will not be on friends and family is completely related to your mobility. And so this conversation about exploring the wisdom years as it relates to our physical health is much broader than you've got to lift weights and do cardio and eat well. It's so much more than that. What happens when you're suddenly tending to an aging parent? Like, I know Michael and I were dealing with both my mom and his dad's ill, their demise last year. And the both of us would come home and say, is this what our aging is going to look like in our mid-80s? Is this how we're going to decline? Like, genetically, are we set up? Like, these are all the things that come up. There are emotional and psychological things that come up, as well as just physically, like, how do I want my aging and elder care? What do I want it to look like? And being the adult children supporting the care of these people, and by the way, happen to be a woman without children, who's going to take care of me when I'm 85 or 90 years old if I'm lucky to live that long, right? And do I actually, I don't want to burden people. How do I not burden people? And as I mentioned last time, some psychologists say, the healthy job of a parent is to raise children, knock them out of the nest, support them when they fly, and they take off and leave. They're not supposed to come home and spend a year, I mean, or a year or 5 years or 10 years taking care of you at the end of your life. At least that's not the culture we have here in the United States. And by the way, if that does happen, guess what another conversation is? What kind of elder are you going to be? Are you going to be someone that your kids actually want to spend time with? Or are you going to be a pain in the ass? And the kids are like talking to their siblings about, oh, mom called again, right? Or dad needs, I don't know about you, but I don't want to be that kind of elder, right? And it starts now with, what am I doing to heal myself, to heal my body, to strengthen myself, to strengthen so that I can be the kind of wise elder that people actually want to hang out with. I mentioned in the last Zoom a documentary that I had just seen called The Only Girl in the Orchestra. It's a short documentary on Netflix. It's about the only woman who played double bass in, I think it was the New York Philharmonic Orchestra. And Terry, if you could put that in, that'd be great. And what struck me about that documentary was it was an interesting documentary. What really struck me was the relationship this woman had with her niece. I watched that relationship through the 20, 30-minute documentary, and I thought, that's the kind of, that's sort of the kind of relationship I would like to have with people when I'm an elder, right? I want people to actually learn something from me and feel like they could turn to me for support and guidance. And I want to be able, like, my mother happened to be somebody who was pretty open until physically she was encumbered in some way. She was always up for doing something fun and different. Like last, I think it was May. So she died in September. In May, some of my siblings invited her to go to the Jersey Shore and spend a week with them at the beach. And she happened to be with me and she was saying, I don't want to do that. I don't want to be a burden to my kids. I don't want to, I don't know if I want to be away that far from home. It was like an 8-hour drive. I don't know if I can make the drive, all of that. And I said to my mother, I get it. She's going to be 88 years old. I said, bear in mind, this could be the one of the last times you get to spend with your kids. Keep that in mind. There's ways to handle. Anyway, she decided to go. Within 2 days of my mother being on the Jersey Shore, we're getting pictures of my mother in what looks like a giant wheelchair with those big wheels that they take you on sand, with two gorgeous young men on either side, with her texting saying, I'm here at the beach with my boyfriends. Like that was my mother, right? And I hope I'm that kind of elder when I get to be her age. My mother, we always used to call her Lucille Ball. She looked like Lucille Ball and she acted like Lucille Ball. She had quite the sense of humor. Anyway. What kind of elder are we going to be? These are all of the things that I think are really worthy of us talking about, exploring, estate planning. One of the things I said in the last Zoom that I think really kind of made people stop, I know it made me stop and like take notice, when Michael and I, my husband and I, were meeting with our estate attorney to create our first estate plan. We, got to know him for a little bit and talked about different things. And then he said, okay, the both of you have just died. And I need to hand the key to your home to somebody who's going to walk in and have access to everything that is in your home right now, the way it is. Who am I giving the key to? Well, that was quite different then. Who's going to be the executor of your will and is going to fulfill your wishes in the will, right? Well, that got us thinking about, wow, like, I have boxes of journals that I have kept that I would not want anyone reading, including my husband, because sometimes I process stuff when I'm angry, and I would never want my husband reading about a time he pissed me off and I wrote about it in a journal, right? That conversation made me realize that in my estate, in my will, is a paragraph that says all of my journals, which have been stored in the basement with tape around them and a note on them, are to be burned with me. Right? And I had tremendous comfort when I made that decision. But if I were to die tomorrow, I have open journals in my in my office right now. Who are the people I can trust that will go in, pick up that book and not look at it? Right? Now, you might say, oh, I would be that kind of person. But until you've lost somebody really close to you, like a mom, And you suddenly walk in and you're going through a desk and you open something up and it was clearly her private thoughts. Depending on how psychologically mature you are, you're either going to shred that or you're going to read it. And you just need to know who's got the key to the kingdom or the queendom, right? So estate planning is a part of the conversation of the wisdom years. Not only that, but like, who am I leaving my things to? Also, I can tell you, I'm in the middle of dismantling my mother's home with my siblings. My mother was just a remarkable woman. It would have been even nice to have certain things spelled out even more. And I did share this story. I'll share it again here because I think every parent should hear this. When I was cleaning up my mother's office, my brother and I were, I found at the bottom of the right-hand drawer a children's book called The Next Place. And Terry, you can put that in the chat. And on the book was a sticky note from my mother's that said, "To my seven blessings, please don't grieve too long. I read this book and know that I'm okay. I'm up here doing the two-step with the angels." Now, it just so happened that all of my siblings, I'm the oldest of seven, all of us were in the house at the same time. And when we found that book, you could visibly see the healing descend over that room. And I thought, boy, if I were a parent, like, and don't wait till you're in your mid-80s, like, today is the day to just write some kind of a note. Because it makes all the difference in the world. And these are things that I think we can also talk about, right? You know, what happens when, how do we want to plan for our death? Who would we want to have around us? Who wouldn't we want to be around us? I mean, that's the other thing. When someone is on their deathbed, everybody wants to see them to like have their one last moment. But you know, it takes a lot of energy to die. And you actually might not want a lot of people around you in that process. So it's good to think about these things ahead of time. Even though we don't like to think about death, we don't like to talk about it. That's a whole other conversation to be had in this body of work called Exploring the Wisdom Years. Couple more things, then I'm going to open it up. We talked about aliveness. You know, you, if you're, I'm assuming you've all seen my blogs. You know, yes, I've jumped in the ocean in the dead of winter. There's nothing that will make you feel more alive than that, people. Let me tell you. I have a cow trough in my backyard filled with water and some ice. I go out every morning with a hammer. I smash the ice and I get in the cold tub. For me, it's a reminder of aliveness every single morning. It's a reminder that I can do hard things because even though I've been doing it now for almost, I think, 4 years, this morning I did not want to get in that tub, but I did it anyway. What makes us feel alive? Like exploring that in the wisdom years is huge. Like I was saying in our last Zoom that I had heard something on NPR about this man that owned a skating path through a forest. It was like miles long through a forest, and how people would come and pay money to ice skate through a forest. And as I listened to that on NPR, I thought, oh my God, that would be awesome, like breathtaking. And I thought, that's aliveness. Or my friend Beth and I hiked in the middle of the woods in the middle of the night with a full moon. We had headlamps just in case. But talk about aliveness, like, what are we going to do in our wisdom years? Because you know what? You've got a limited amount of time left. This is where mortality is such a gift. Every day I think about my ending because it keeps me alive and saying yes to things I'd normally put off or not say yes to. So how do we want to cultivate aliveness? There's a lot to be talked about just in terms of that. And that's where we actually could really benefit from hearing from each other about what makes you feel alive. Like, I know this Friday night on Valentine's Day, my husband and I, for Valentine's Day, some of you are going to think I'm crazy. Some of you are going to totally understand. We're going to an IMAX theater because the new Led Zeppelin documentary is out. And for those of you who read my blog about learning pianos, learning the piano, I started with Stairway to Heaven and I loved Led Zeppelin as a kid. And I guarantee you, I'm going to feel really alive on Friday night. I hope my husband does too. Loneliness, building friendships. There are wonderful, wonderful ways to build friendships later in life. We can talk about that if you want to talk about that even today. How about sex in the wisdom years? We didn't talk about that on the last Zoom, but when I got emails from people afterwards, one of my friends emailed me and said, "Hey, what about sex in the wisdom years?" And I said, "My God, there's like a whole, because I know just from looking at some of the faces here, some of you hear that and think, oh God. Some of you hear that and think, really? Some of you hear that and think, yes, ma'am, or yes, sir, right? Like there's a whole conversation to be had about how does sex change in the wisdom years. I happen to know some people who in their mid to late 80s had a very vibrant sex life. The first time I learned that, I will naively admit, I was surprised. I just kind of assumed maybe people don't really have sex anymore when you get to your mid 80s. Like, and I love some of the grins on your faces I'm looking through right now. It's like they're like Cheshire cat grins. It's the sweetest thing. Okay, releasing responsibilities in our wisdom years, getting rid of the stuff you just don't want to do anymore, the people you've been taking care of who just never take your advice, or that, are kind of stuck and maybe that's where they're supposed to be. Like, work responsibilities. Maybe you want to change your work. I said last time when I was thinking about the podcast, there's three rules I live by now when it comes to taking on any projects. I don't do it for the money. I won't do anything that bores me because I don't, why am I going to waste my life, right? And I won't do anything if it's going to consistently steal my peace. It might steal a little peace in the beginning because it's scary and exciting at the same time. But if it feels like drudgery, it ain't gonna happen at this point in my life. And so I jokingly said that if I had to make money to support myself, I would find the best restaurant in town and I would go wait tables because I loved it when I was 20 and I would love it when I'm 80. So I have no doubt about that. Anyway, do you see what I mean? How there is this whole, like, there are huge conversations to be had about how we make the rest of our lives the best of our lives. And not only that, we make them rich and interesting and alive and meaningful. And, we're not like doing the crap we just don't want to do anymore. And we're feeling connected to people, like we work at feeling intimate connections with people. All of these things this is what we should be spending the wisdom years on. And it doesn't mean, some of you are going to say, yeah, well, but I have to work. Well, that's okay. But like, let's make sure you're working, doing something either that is easy, stress-free, and pays the bills so that you can enjoy your life outside of work, or that you're working, doing something that you're just really jazzed about. Right? We all have choices. They might be difficult choices, like, oh, I might have to downsize my life. Oh, I might have to move in with someone else, but I'm going to find somebody really cool to live with. We always have choices. We don't want to ever confuse tough choices with having no choice at all. But there are a lot of new choices to be made in our wisdom years. And this is the stuff that I'm jazzed about. And I hope you are too. And I guess the final thing I'll say before I open it up and talk to you and maybe do a little coaching is I would honestly say that I'm 65 years old, and I, if on a scale from 1 to 10, 10 was huge fear of death, and 1 being no fear at all. I would say that 5 years ago, I was probably at a 9. And today, I'm probably at a 6, some days a 5. And I see the path to getting to the point where I can come to the end of my life feeling so grateful for this ride, so blessed, so ready, and able to complete this beautiful life in the way that I want to. And I would want that for everybody. And interestingly enough, the way to get there is by really making your wisdom years the very best years of your life and using your wisdom years to wake up, to do the healing work you haven't done yet, to face the things you haven't faced yet, to build the kind of soul family that will support you in doing that. These are the things that I'm really looking at. How best, what are the best ways to have this conversation? And clearly, I have to tell you that, like, to see that there's, over 400 people on this Zoom, tells me, I know statistically, because I've been doing this long enough, it tells me that this is a hot area. And yeah, okay. So raise your hand button is, let's see where it is here. Well, it's going to be, look for the raise your hand button. And if you have, now I'm going to ask you, I'm going to be very specific about this just because we have a lot of people here. I'm going to start by doing some coaching. And so I'm going to ask you to be very, very specific. Get right to the thing you would like coaching on. Like, I'll let you know if I need more information, but like, let's see if we can kind of streamline this. And I'm trying to see Terry for some, oh, there we go. Okay, great. It's just Zoom is doing it differently this time. So I'm going to start out with coaching. And then if we have time to talk about, to hear comments or such, I'll do that. But I just want to try and use an economy of time here for the coaching, for this one. Trust me, there'll be more. And also, yeah, I forget what I was going to say. Okay, let's start with you, Carol. And where are you, Carol? Oh, let me see. There we go. Carol, where are you? I'm asking you to unmute.
Hi, Cheryl.
There you
Hi,
are.
everyone.
Hi.
So, I made a list of a few things, but none of them were to get coaching. So, I did disagree with something you said, though.
Yeah, go ahead.
Actually, I'm just going to say one thing first, which is thank you. I remember Oprah and you said, no matter before you went out there, you said to yourself, no matter what
Oh,
say, I
even
love
if I even if I suck, I'll love myself anyway.
exactly.
That was the mantra. That's right.
Yes. And that has stayed with me and it helped me understand what loving myself meant. So I really want to thank you because I had a hard time understanding what it meant.
So let me just, can I just tell people that one day I was at a conference speaking with Debbie Ford. I'll make this quick. Was speaking at a conference with Debbie Ford. And after I got off stage, I was having lunch with Debbie Ford and Loretta LaRoche. Anybody remember Loretta LaRoche, the comedian? She's still around and she's hysterical. And I said to the gals at the table, God, I still get so nervous before I speak. And Loretta said, oh, honey, I don't get nervous. I have a ball. I can't wait to get out there. I mean, like, she had the complete opposite reaction that I did. And I was shocked by that. And lunch ended, and I said to Debbie, I really someday I want to be confident enough that I can actually just go out and speak and lose myself and not worry about what other people think. And Debbie said to me, and this was life-changing, so that's why I'm telling all of you. Debbie said, oh, sweetheart, you're not afraid of what other people think. You're afraid of what you think and how you're going to beat yourself up when you get off the stage. And it was revelatory for me. And I started to pay attention, and she was absolutely right that when I would get off stage, I would start critiquing myself. I shouldn't have said this. I should have done that. Oh, I forgot to do this. And so I made up this mantra, even if I suck, I'll love myself anyway. And I decided that whenever I would come off stage, I would just be really loving to myself. Well, fast forward, I don't know how, a year or so, I was doing an Oprah show. It was actually right after September 11th, and Oprah had asked me to come in. We were doing a show on overcoming tragedy. And in the middle, we took a break. And in the middle of the break, I was saying something to her about grief. And when we came back on live, she said to the audience, Cheryl was just saying something important about grief. Cheryl, tell them what you were saying. And I completely lost my train of thought. So I'm like literally on camera with millions of people going. And Oprah, being the pro that she is, jumped right in and said, "Oh, remember you were saying blah, blah, blah." And then we picked up from there. But that was the day I came off stage, walked back to the green room, and the first thing I said to myself was, "Honey, I love you. Even though you screwed up, I love you anyway." And that really began this. And what happened? I started giving my best speech. I mean, you all can see what you see is what you get here. There's not a lot of pretense. And when I finish this, the only thing I'm going to be thinking about is what do I want to, how do I want to help them next? Not, oh, I should have said, I mean, all right, I did beat myself up for a little while when I didn't hit record and I could tell more than 100 people were trying to get on. Yes, but I put a time limit on it. I gave myself 10 minutes and then I got on with it. So anyway. Thank you for bringing that up. Let me ask you if you have a question.
Well, I do have a question.
Hey, go ahead.
I bolded a note when I was disagreeing, so I'll go to that.
Yeah, go ahead.
You were talking about learning to manage our minds is obviously one of
Yeah.
the most important things we can do.
Yes.
And I unexpectedly became a coach in the last couple of years, so thank you for being one of the first coaches. But anyway, the question was about managing the mind. And you said, if I think long enough, I would, or different enough, I would feel better. And could you just clarify? I'm not quite sure
Yeah,
because.
no, what I said was the mind would have you believe, I probably didn't say it this way. Our minds would have us believe that if I just, like, let's say you're faced with some kind of problem or upset in some way, our minds would have us believe if I just think about it hard enough, long enough, in the right way, then I'll feel better. When the truth is, the mind is not where we go to feel better. Presence is where we go to feel better. And it's the opposite of what we've been taught. But anytime, I mean, you know what I've learned? I've learned that life actually loves us and wants to support us. We just get in the way. And it's the mind that gets in the way. We overthink things, we overanalyze things. And it's really what I'm saying is we need to practice being present more and not being so distracted by. Seduced by and compelled by our own thoughts. Does that make sense?
Yes. So is that another way of saying actually feel the what you're feeling? And once you've actually felt it, then if you want to go, well, if I thought about it a little bit differently, I actually could get out of my own way.
Yes, most of us will avoid feeling by thinking. We'll go right up into our heads and start thinking about things rather than just letting ourselves feel whatever we're feeling. Feelings are important, as long as we don't get lost there. But yes, I would agree with that. See
Thank
that?
you.
Okay, you're very welcome and thank you. Thank you. Okay, so now we're going to coaching. Hey, Terry, I'm just going to say to you, normally, Terry, I see the raised hands in the boxes rather than having to view them. Are you seeing it differently this time
No,
too?
I'm seeing the raised hands.
Okay.
And they're all at the top of the screen.
Oh, you know what? I know what it is. Thank you. I'm saying I got it. Okay, good. Thank you. Natalie. Hi, Natalie. I'm going to ask you to unmute and let's see what your question is. Go ahead.
Hello. Hi, Cheryl. Thank you so much
You're
for
welcome.
speaking with me. So you mentioned a scale for fear of death, and I would say that my fear of dying early without experiencing everything I want to in life would probably be about a 10 on 10.
Oh,
So,
good. So, Natalie, can I just tell you right up front? You ready? You are going to die before you get a chance to do everything.
Okay. So how about
You know what?
dying
And I
early?
you do. Like, I had a therapist say
Yes.
that to me in my 20s. Like, I hope you're hungry to want to do a whole bunch of things, sweetheart. And you know what? I hope you die with, one more thing you wish you could do. But I'm wondering, is there something you really want to do that you haven't done yet that you keep putting off?
That That no, I feel like I'm really embracing that. But my major fear, and I think what's really limiting me, is sort of my fear of developing significant health issues. And as you age, you need to do more sort of ongoing screening. And during those periods, I'm literally sort of immobilized with fear. And I know I'm doing it to myself. I'm getting in my own way.
Yes.
But it's kind of like my mind, I'm sort of in this well-worn path that I can't seem that the grooves are so high that even though I know I should, like I'm responsible for this, I can't seem to change.
Yes.
And
Yes.
it's
Yeah.
really, I suffer during those periods and I'm doing it to myself.
Yes.
And the rest, well, I get through the test and then I'm fine. And then it's just the thought of them, I break out in a sweat, you know?
So I'm gonna make a little note. By the way, do you have an animal with you? Like I
I
heard.
do my dog,
Oh, good.
my
Okay.
baby dog. Yeah,
I was like, okay.
she's almost 15, so my sweet angel.
Oh, sweet angel. What's her
Yes,
name? What's
her
her name?
name's Ruby.
Ruby. Ruby.
Ruby, and
Ruby.
she's just the best dog ever.
Okay. So you're talking about medical anxiety, which, by the
Yes.
way, another really great topic, the wisdom years. Because you know what I've discovered is that people seem to be a lot less afraid of dying and more afraid of getting caught up in a crazy medical system with the anxiety around testing and all of that, right? So, Natalie, this is a beautiful example of the mind running amok, right?
Yes.
And you're very wise in recognizing you've got these neural pathways. This is important for everybody to hear. The mind likes to organize itself around things. And it will often choose scary things to organize itself around because they're the most compelling. So what happens is we start to worry about something, and this will happen, you know, if you're getting a medical test, all of a sudden you start worrying. And as we worry, I'm doing this because we really are deepening the groove, right? We're building very powerful neural networks that are almost like a vacuum that keeps sucking us in to that network, right? And so the more we worry, the harder it is to not worry because the
Yeah.
neural networks are so strong. So wouldn't it be great if I could just say, Natalie, stop worrying?
I
That's
don't.
silly. It's just stupid, actually. It's irresponsible. What I would say to you, though, is I would invite you, Natalie, to think about getting a PhD in managing your mind. And you're not going to be able to do it alone. So that's going to mean a couple of different things. It might mean some therapy, and for you could even like, I'm a huge fan of therapy. I've been in and out of therapy since I was 19. I was an early adopter, early adopter. It could be internal family systems, IFS, write that down, that looks at the parts of you that get triggered. The young parts of you that get triggered. We don't have enough time to explore that here, but that could be something. It could be enrolling in a meditation class with a really great meditation teacher and learning how to become present and to take ownership of your mind rather than it running you, right? It could be another kind of tapping therapies, something I've done for 25 years. Tapping therapies, you might find a tapping practitioner who could do some tapping with you on medical anxiety. Somebody I just saw popped up in the chat, Rick Hansen, great resource. Look up Rick Hansen, Terry, on YouTube. You can just find, I think he's a cognitive neuroscientist, I think. Really great resources about managing the mind. There are techniques you can learn, Natalie. Why is it important? It's important because, yes, as we get older, there may be, Joseph Campbell used to say, the body's like a car. The bumper's going to fall off. The exhaust is going to have to be replaced, right? Like, that's what's going to happen. So, we're going to be engaging with the medical community more and more. And we want to be able, potentially, And so we want to be able to do so in a way that doesn't frighten us and immobilize us. I promise you, Natalie, there's help for that. I come from a family of medical anxiety. I had a mother who was very, very anxious from a very young age. I'm telling you, I had to do an an hour-long MRI a year ago, and I practically fell asleep. And when I came out, the technician said, "We've never seen anybody so relaxed in an MRI machine." And the reason was because I had put a practice of presence in place and had studied meditation and learned to manage my mind beforehand. If you had told me before, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, I would have been that person. I would have said, "You're out of your mind." So it can be done, is why I tell you that.
Okay, thank you.
And therapy might be good too, because I think we also need to explore. There are some people who are not built to have a lot of medical tests done. It's actually not good self-care to do a lot of testing. Like, for example, I had a friend of mine who's very, a lot of medical anxiety, who talked to me about wanting to do one of those full body scans. I said, "Not in a million years, because the body's a complex machine. Chances are they're going to find something, and then you're going to ruminate about it, and how we think influences our body." So it's good. So those are some thoughts. Is that helpful?
Absolutely.
Okay. And Terry, maybe you can put on the tapping solution. If you haven't already, you probably have in the chat as well.
Okay. Thank you, Cheryl.
You're very welcome. Thank you. Okay. Again, coaching only, right? Juliana? I'm asking you to unmute. There we go. Hi.
Hi. Thank you. Oh, there's 100 things. I'm trying to get it down to
Just one in
one.
quickly, please.
Anger. I need to hear a little bit more. Years ago, you talked about practicing the art of disappointing others. And I'm not afraid to do that, but to do it with grace and love is a big leap at times. With people that you care about, or today, spending hours on the phone with just insane, illogical business calls that that I want to turn violent. So it's with the frustration. So it's the anger that pops up that is such a waste, and I logically know it, but changing that to something that is fruitful and productive and kind.
So the first thing I would say is a couple of things I'd say again, because for lack of time, and I trust my intuition with this too. Juliana, are you familiar with the Enneagram?
Yes.
Okay, do you know what type you are?
I think I was told a two. I can't. I'm not that familiar, so go ahead.
So just write that down. I would like for you, Terry, can we put enneagraminstitute.com in the chat? I'd love for you to verify your type. If you are a type two, it's the helper. So, in what I would say if I were guessing, Juliana, is that you spend a lot of time helping people, dealing with other people's shit, and eventually you get resentful and you want to blow. Because twos go to eight under stress, and they get really resentful and they do blow. They like want to kill people. So that's one thing to look at. I mentioned the Enneagram, which is something I'd want to do like a whole Zoom on, because it is a beautiful way to understand the personality, ego versus soul. So that's something to explore, Juliana, because you want to have compassion for yourself. You can't just quiet the anger. It's not going to work that way. You want to ex The second thing I want to say is I would want to explore the anger, probably with a therapist. Like, what's going on? What if I'm sitting on a pile of rage, which, by the way, most women are? What if I'm sitting on a pile of rage, and a lot of it I'm unaware of what's going on, and I need a safe place, a safe, productive place to begin to process that anger so I can empty myself of it and then have greater access to the grace and love part of the being disappointing people, right? If we've been mute in our own self-care for a long time, we're usually, I mean, my mother was sitting on so much rage because the women of her generation had no choices. We're now going to have a whole bunch of women that are going to sit on rage again because we're kind of going back to the 50s, right? We already have women who, whether you realize it or not, are being triggered by the fact that we've got, a political system. Regardless of what your politics are, the reality is women's agency has changed. And so that triggers a lot for people, whether they're conscious of it or not. I want you to be as awake and alive and self-aware as you can possibly be, Juliana. I would see your anger as a blessing. My anger is trying to get my attention and take me somewhere, and I am willing to follow. I'm going to let it lead me to what's really going on and to my most authentic self instead of, the person who just wants to be gentle and kind and like put a nice little bow on it and like put it in a corner somewhere. No. Your anger's trying to tell you something, sweetheart. Let's listen to it. Make sense?
Yes, thank
Great.
you.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. Chitra, welcome. It's so lovely to see you.
Yes, thank you so much, Cheryl, for I lost my mother in December, and you were very kind. I just love your session about ego versus soul, and I think the ancient Indian wisdom has lost lots to teach us in this regard, and I will send some resources to you. The coaching tip I need is that all my life I have been labeled as a very kind and responsible person, and I'm also working. I'm 65, and I want to take care of myself, and so I just need some help with disappointing people. I don't get angry, but I think I take on everybody's burden.
Sure. So maybe Chitra, you do need to get angry because the nice girl's going to rob you of your life. That's what my first coach said to me way in the beginning. Sweetheart, you're a nice girl. I was so proud of how I just was so helpful and took care of everybody. I mean, this is the other thing I think we want to realize here in our wisdom years. We take on as an identity the behaviors, the personality that we've used to adapt to the world. We take it on as an identity, which means we have to be respectful of that identity as we dismantle it. You can't just say, that's it. I mean, my mother used to do this. I don't know if any of you had mother, like my mother would reach a boiling point. Juliana, this is what I was talking about, where, she's the mother of seven children. We were all little kids and she'd reach a boiling point where it'd be like, that's it. Things are going to change around here. I'm going to pack a suitcase. I'm going in the car and I'm leaving and I'm never coming back, right? Because she was just so fed up. She didn't have a path out. She didn't know. And she didn't have a lot of options then. We have a lot more options now. And it might start with getting yourself a coach. It could very well be that you're going to get a coach and you're going to say to that coach, and I would say this just like this. I would like to get a PhD in learning how to disappoint people gracefully over the next year. Could you help me do that? And then, because if I were working with you, that's what we would do. We would begin to look at, okay, where are you helping? And it could start by doing this. You could say to the people in your life that typically come to you for support, I had a coaching session and I was told that I need to take a 6-month sabbatical from giving. So I'm letting you know ahead of time that I'm going to be doing that so that you don't take it personally when I say no when you ask for my help. And you do it like this with a smile on your face, right? So that you warn people ahead of time that you are going to, in an effort to honor my extreme self-care, I'm going to take a sabbatical from giving. Now, what's going to happen? It's going to feel really uncomfortable. And the next thing you're going to feel is guilt. When the first time you say no to somebody, you're going to feel guilt. Why? Because when you build your identity on behaviors that kept you safe as a kid or keep you in the good graces of others now, it feels life-threatening when you stop. And the guilt is one of the ways, first of all, when I say when you feel guilty, it's good. It means you're on the right track. But it's also one of the ways we try to pull ourselves back in line. So that it doesn't feel so life-threatening. This is why we need each other. It's why we need support from one another. It's why I started the Life Makeover groups 22 years ago, because I knew left to our own devices, we don't grow alone. And I'll take this opportunity to say on the last Zoom, we talked about friendships, building a soul family that will support you. I have a group of women I belong to, there's like five or six of us. We support each other to stay awake, to stay alive, to tell the truth, to do hard things. We all need that kind of support. Well, how do you find that? I'll tell you a couple things. Terry, if you could put in the chat, Mel Robbins has a podcast out this week about building friendships. I highly recommend people listen to that. Also, if you want to make new soul friends, you are going to have to leave your house. Virtual will never be the same as in person, and soul family has to be in person, as far as I'm concerned. You need to go someplace, take a class where you have to go every week for a number of weeks, join a gym where you go 3 times a week, every week, and you get to know people there. People who clearly share your values and priorities, whether it's yoga, painting class, whatever it might be. That's how we meet people, we get to know people. I jumped in cold water. The next week, one person joined us. The next week, five people joined us. Within 6 months, we had 30 women showing up at the ocean, jumping into cold water. And you know what? When you're going to jump into the ocean in January in the Northeast, there are no masks, there are no personalities, the egos are gone, you're scared shitless, and you're holding pe hands with strangers, being vulnerable and authentic. And that's how friendships are made. And four of the six women I hang out with, I met through cold water swimming. So maybe you find a cold water place near you. Not you, Chitra, not just yet. But I would think about, and if you can't afford a coach, then find a partner, like find a buddy, somebody who says, yes, I need to learn how to disappoint people. Let's help each other do it. Right, so that you get some kind of support. That's really important. Thank you so much, and good to see you.
Thank you.
And you're
Thank you.
right about Indian culture. Autobiography of a Yogi, must read for everybody. It's a beautiful way to get introduced to just, I mean, I'm passionate about Hinduism, and I think India has a lot to teach us about about presence, actually, especially our culture. Thank you so much, sweetheart. All right, it's 4 o'clock, but here's the deal. I'm willing to go a little bit longer. If you are, this is recorded, so if you have to go, you're welcome to go. But otherwise, I'm gonna talk to a few more people. And Terry, can you do that? Are you okay with that? Terry, yeah, you are. Okay, great. Okay, good. All right. So, Kim, let's talk to you. Hi, Kim.
Hello, amazing. Oh, I just love everything you're saying. I'm also one of seven as well. So I'm resonating with a lot you're saying. It's making me laugh quite a lot. So my question is, can you speak to, so I'm about to build my community and I'm slowly but surely getting there, but I knew that I had to begin the mirror work that I've been doing. I listened to the big talk that you did with Louise Hay quite some time back on the Empower You app.
Right.
And it's helping me get out there and feel more confident in myself. But can you possibly speak to like advanced mirror work for the wisdom years of being able to look in the mirror? And because I say, oh, you're so cute and it works. That works for me, or you're adorable. But I would love to be able to live into that a bit more and be and say phrases and look at myself and really believe them as I move into this part of my life. I'm 46 now.
Yeah, so I would thank you for that question. And Kim is referring to Louise Hay's mirror work, where she, every morning she would look in a mirror and say, "I love you. I really, really love you." And in the beginning, it feels like ridiculous and foolish, and you don't believe it, but you just keep doing it, and eventually it works. To me, Kim, this is an even bigger conversation, and it's part of the Wisdom Years conversation, which is, another thing Louise Hay said that I said before is, you will be with you longer than anyone else on the planet. So you might as well make it a good relationship. And that's what this is about, right? This is about how do I build a really loving, nurturing, authentic relationship with myself? Mirror work is a piece of that. But Kim, that's not the only way you're going to get there. Like, do you keep a journal? Do you write to yourself in a journal on a regular basis? Do you go for walks by yourself with nothing in your ears? Just being with your own company and your own thoughts. Do you give yourself the pleasure of being out in nature, or the ability to just sit by a window and stare outside if you have a nice view without doing anything at all? Do you meditate on a regular basis? Do you read really interesting books that inspire you? Do you take yourself to the theater or to, like the relationship, the wisdom years is the time for us to really date ourselves in a whole other way, right? If we're not doing those things and we're looking in a mirror, it will be helpful, but it's going to take a long time. Right. So one of the regular practices, I probably do this every day, is hand on my heart. Like if I'm upset about something, my hand goes on my heart, sweetheart. Sweetheart, what's going on? You all know I call myself sweetheart. Sweetheart, take a deep breath. Like sit, let's sit down. Take a breath here. What's going on? Like, what are we doing in a very intentional way to build a relationship with ourselves on a daily basis? I just saw in the chat too. I saw Julia Cameron's The Artist Way. When Julia wrote about morning pages, to me, morning pages are just the way, they're a beautiful way to say to ourselves, I'm here for you. I'm making you a priority. Let's get all the crap that's you're worried about, that you're thinking about. That gets the first page, and maybe the first and the second page. And then we get to like the meat of the relationship in the third page. Having a practice like that, if you can't do it every day, do it every other day. Like don't let not doing it every day stop you. But this is really about how am I going to romance myself in the wisdom years, Kim? That's what's going to help you to believe it when you look in the mirror. Does that make sense?
That makes a lot of sense because I do a lot of the journaling and all I do. I think I do all the stuff, but I definitely don't romance myself. It's all very serious. So I
Okay.
think I like that.
So then let me say the opposite in case there's anybody else like him on here. This is also really important. There are some people, I was one of them years ago, who make self-care, let me think of how to say this the right way. It's like Project Fix the Self, right? And they become like they think if I just read enough books, if I take enough workshops, if I journal enough, that is not romancing yourself. And it would be interesting for every single person on this Zoom to think about what romance, like if I were going to romance myself, Kim, first of all, I think about things like I'm going to definitely take myself out into nature. I'm going to let myself sit by my back window that looks out over the wildlife. I'm going to stare at a bird feeder. I'm going to make sure I have real, like every night when I go to bed, I have a heating pad that I plug in before I go to bed so that my bed is warm. Then I turn it off and take it out of the bed. Like I have like, a drawer filled with delicious teas and I give myself the treat of that. My cold tub is absolutely romancing myself. You wouldn't think so, but like, trust me, when you break ice and you get in a tub, you have no choice but to be present. And in that moment, the whole world stops. And I just feel like, oh my God, the deliciousness of the present moment is where I want to live forever. Right? So lighting a candle when you've never lit a candle before. Like, what would you do if you were romancing somebody else? How are you going to do that for yourself? Like, enough with filling this. We want to drop down into this. How am I going to live in my body? Do I have really cushy pajamas that I love? Soft socks? Like, does that make sense, Kim?
It is exactly what I needed to hear. Exactly. Yes, thank you so much.
You're welcome. When you think of romancing yourself, just tell us the first thing that comes to mind.
So I'll be in Ireland next week and I'm going to go to the sauna on my own and dip in the ocean because I usually do it with people, but I'm going to go and do it on my own.
Okay, that's beautiful. And go in the ocean last, right? Don't
Yes.
do the cold water last.
No, I'm very well behaved in that respect.
I'm kind of teasing you. Doing things alone is also a beautiful, like take yourself out to dinner. And yeah, it's going to feel uncomfortable in the beginning. Do it anyway. Do it anyway. Okay, I
Lovely.
love that. All right.
Thank you.
We're going to hold more of these and I'm going to want to know what you did. So make sure you write down what you did. Becky, how about you? Hi, honey. Hi, Becky.
Hi, sorry, it took me a second to unmute. I'm well, and like everyone else, I thank you terribly for doing these very, very much.
You're welcome.
My question is about PTSD. I, like you, have been carer for both my parents who passed. They had wonderful long lives, both in their 90s, but I did spend 5 years taking care of my father. And I took care of my husband when he died 30 years ago from cancer.
Wow, you've had a whole life of caretaking people, haven't you?
I'm a middle child, and I've had a whole life of death. My first really serious boyfriend in college died. So my, in working on all of this, and I follow you closely, and I've been working for years on a lot of these things. I think I do pretty well at romancing myself. I know I could do better, but it's a big thing that I've been working on. But in spending time and trying to figure things out, I've decided that I think I have PTSD just from a lifetime of death.
Yeah. Okay. Becky, I wish you were here so I could give you a big hug.
It's okay.
And I would
I'm getting it.
no, I know, but and I would just hug you and I wouldn't say a word. I would literally just hug you. And I would hug you for way longer than you felt comfortable. Because that would give you a chance to start to melt a little bit, because you've had to hold it together for a long time, I get.
Yeah.
I'm also going to say to you, Becky, do you know who Frances Weller is? The work of Frances Weller?
No.
Perry, Frances Weller, The Wild Edge of Sorrow, such a beautiful title of a book. I would look up his work, Becky. I think it would be helpful. But really, I believe every soul has a path, Becky. Every
Yeah.
soul.
Why did I pick this one?
Well, there's a reason. And you know what? I would love for you, and I mean this with all my heart. I've said this for years as a coach, traveled around the world. Some souls take on big challenges, and that tells me how big they are. And I would really encourage you to stop, turn around, and look at your life and say to yourself, you know what? There's a reason I came here to take on death, and I want to figure out what it is. And I'm going to find, like, it's like a death doula, but for the psychological part, seriously, I would want for you to find the most beautiful shepherd who could help you to explore the deeper meaning, to build meaning into this life of loss for you. It's there and it's rich. I mean, I probably don't have to tell you. Grief is one of the ways we profoundly confront ourselves like nobody's business. Like we get to know ourselves on a level that you don't know until you've had real grief. I mean, I can feel it. Like we're part of the same club, and there are such riches, such depth and wisdom and bliss in that club, Becky, waiting for you if you're willing to really explore it, but you can't do it alone. You cannot do it alone. Like I
Yeah, that's how I feel. I haven't been making any progress on
Yeah. Listen, none of us, we're not here to do things alone, people. I mean, we're just not. And you know what, Becky, I'm only going to tell you, remember I said this to you. There's a reason you're meant to do something around this work. Like I can tell. You opened your mouth and I knew right where you were. If you are willing to take this on and explore this, I promise you there is a gift around all of this, but you're going to find it through your own healing journey. Take the PTSD seriously. And I would find somebody who
Interesting.
specializes in that, who specializes in PTSD as it relates to death, so that they can really take you under in a safe way and do this beautiful healing work. And I suspect Francis Weller's work might lead you somewhere, because he's training people to do some of what he does. And yeah.
Thank
You,
you.
who knows? I mean, maybe you become a death doula. I don't know. I'm not saying you do, but there's you're too big a soul for this to. This is not just like willy-nilly, like, oh, you came here and you're going to like suffer all these deaths and then bye-bye. No. And you know it. I can tell you know it. I see the wisdom in you. Do you get that? You get that wisdom? You know it exists, right, Becky?
Yes.
Yeah, it does. Okay. All right, sweetheart. I want to know what happened.
Okay, thanks very much.
You're very welcome. I'm going to just keep going for Terry, is that okay? Just shake your head yes if it's okay. Thank you. Chris, let's see. What's your question, Chris? I'm asking you to unmute. Chris, Chrys, are you there? There you go.
Cheryl, how
Hi.
much I enjoy receiving your newsletter every Sunday. I'm looking forward to that. That is a part of my romancing myself.
Oh, thank you. That's very sweet. Thank
So
you.
anyway, I am retired as a school counselor, family therapist,
Oh, God bless
and
you.
I see quite a bit of the value of all the elements you're covering. I do have, though, coming from a different culture,
Yeah.
I tend to align myself over the years with female women from my culture. Convenience at first, children growing up, this, that, and then they became some relationships. Where I find myself these days is in particular with a couple of them who we all now have adult children, grandchildren, who get lost, have been lost in taking care of the grandkids, the adult kids. And
Right.
I feel sidetracked. I feel dismissed. And when I try to share some of what I've known through my career, through your trainings here and there about self-care, soul care, magnifying, intensifying, building the being versus the doing muscles, I find resistance and almost loneliness.
Yes.
So I am wondering if I realize that there is nothing I can do to shift. Somebody has to be willing to take that on. However, I must admit that I do remain feeling lonely
Yes.
and resentful because I invested all this time with women from my background who
Yeah. Oh.
remain to be so committed to
I
things
get.
that I find not to be our purpose at this stage in our life.
Yeah, so let me say a few things, Chris. And again, this is just this is it may not be to you personally, but I think again, you bring up important topics, which is friendships change over time. We outgrow people, and we have to be willing to outgrow people. Here's the other thing that happens. I'm going to speak for myself because this is true for me. If I've built an identity as a helper for most of my life, I promise you I've attracted lots of people who need help, and I felt really good about helping them. And there's been times, Chris, I'll say to you where I'm also the firstborn, so I've been a know-it-all. I've helped people. I still do it sometimes, help people when they don't ask for my help. I can be intrusive with that. I'm not proud of it, but I'm at least self-aware of it, and I'm always like trying to be vigilant about it. And I'm also deeply committed to my own growth. And so that is an important part of my life, which increases the chances of me outgrowing people, or might increase the chances of friendships changing. Whereas somebody used to be a close friend, maybe that I saw every week or spoke to two or three times a week. Maybe I see them once a month. So I think there's a gray area, and we have to recognize that our friendships need to be reevaluated over time, and that our identity, as we start to dismantle our identity, our friendships are going to change, because I don't want to be the helper. I don't want to be the one taking care of people. And fortunately, I'm cultivating friendships that are more mutual and where we help each other, let's say. I also have need to think about the kind of friend I am. Like, am I a good friend? Do I have good boundaries? Do I keep in touch with people? Do I romance my friends like I would romance a lover, minus the sex and the physical part, right? Like, I tell my friends I love you. They tell me they love me. Like, these are habits and behaviors that are new in the last 5 years that I've really cultivated because I've wanted to develop really good friendships. It might be, Chris, that it's time for you to start getting out, like I said earlier, going to places where you're going to meet new people on a regular basis. Can't be a one-off. It has to be every single week. And go to the places that where people are doing things that you want to be doing or that you've thought about doing, but you're nervous about doing. I spent one whole year doing the opposite of what I would normally do in order to stretch my comfort zone. And I met great people as a result of that. So it's normal. And I also know, Chris, I know that lonely feeling. When I shared this in the last Zoom, when I was traveling all the time speaking, my closest friends were in other parts of the world. And I was embarrassed to admit that when I came home, I was lonely. I didn't have local friends. I didn't have somebody I could call and say, "Hey, want to grab breakfast?" Like, that just didn't exist. And then I felt embarrassed about being lonely, which then made me feel like I felt like an idiot. So then I didn't want to do anything because I thought, I mean, I actually thought there's something wrong with me that I just can't make friends. Like, that was just dumb. Yeah, what's wrong is you're staying home. You're not going out and you're not meeting people. You're not stepping outside of your comfort zone to go and do things that you normally wouldn't do. And when I started doing that, everything changed, Chris. And I swear that now the five or six friendships that I have are probably friends for life, because we're all committed to growth. We're all committed to each other, to fostering healthy friendships. I mean, I don't know. We may outgrow each other. I'm open. I mean, that's the beauty of age, right? Eventually you realize don't count on anything because you're always growing and evolving. But I hope that's helpful, Chris. And because you said you were a family therapist and because I was a coach, I needed to be reminded not to coach my friends, love my friends. And I will say to my friends sometimes, "Okay, I want to coach you right now. Can I have permission? Or, like, would you rather me just shut up and listen?" And sometimes they say, "Shut up and listen." And sometimes they say, No, I want your coaching." So you might just want to keep that in mind as well. There might be some friends in your life that would love a more mutual relationship, but the friendship has been one where you've been the wise elder, and maybe that needs to shift as well. So thank you, Chris. I hope that's helpful. And all right. I know I see all your hands up, and I wish I could get to all of you. So let's see if, and by the way, if I have spoken to you, make sure you check the chat box, because we also have really lovely, helpful people here, and there may be messages in there for you. Let's see if we can do some quick laser coaching before I sign off. And Mary, let's see if it's you. I'm asking you to unmute.
Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, Mary.
So my question for my fast coaching is,
Yeah.
I'm 61, so I'm beginning to think about my next home. Been
Yes.
in this one for 33 years in a large city. So lots of traffic, multi-story, master's upstairs.
So what's the question, Mary?
Okay, so the question is, so I can get to visualizing what it looks like, what it feels like, and
Good.
the place I get stuck is, if I leave this house, will I then be sorry, or I will miss it, or how to re you know how to
I
step.
get it.
Yes.
It's beautiful. So, first of all, Mary, let me say this, and this is helpful for everybody. It's another really good conversation for the wisdom years. I told people in the last Zoom, after seeing what my mom went through and what Michael's father went through, my husband and I, who don't have children, decided to invest money in finishing over our garage so that 20, 30 years, who knows? We don't know. We would have a place for people to live to take care of us. Like we were forward thinking, future thinking in relation to that. Mary, when you start talking about, I think this is so important. When we start talking about where would I live next, I want you to think of it as like, oh my God, I am so excited. I'm a little nervous because I've been here 33 years, but I am so excited that I get to pick the next place my soul's going to live. So I am going to like imagine, what do I want? And I've done this in the past. I'm going to draw like big wind. I'm making this up. Big windows, lots of light, one floor, whatever it might be. Like, get excited about it, right? Instead of this being, oh, I'm getting old and now I need to find a place to like, this is what our parents did, right? Like, oh, I need a single story home because I'm not gonna. And my husband Michael will say to me, he was like, and he's like 30. He'll say to me, how about if we like focus on being able to walk up and down stairs when we're 90? Like, what about putting the energy into mobility instead of, oh my God, like instead of the preventative care, right?
Because I think I might not have given you the clarity of I am excited about the next place.
Well,
It's
I know exactly. Just stay with me, Mary.
sadness of
Yeah.
the leaving.
Yes, stay with me because I know where we're going here. So I got when you said I'm visualizing it, I'm noticing that's great. And I'm just saying to everybody else, that's a smart thing to do. Instead of like preventative maintenance, oh my God, I'm going to be elderly. I got to go find a like, see what I can get away with. It's like, no, where's my soul going to live next? And then we get to the sadness and we get to change. And Mary, you're going to feel sad without a doubt, but it's not going to take you down. Like, it's sort of like when we start to obsess about making choices and decisions. I need to make the right decision. There are never any right decisions. It's all about can we handle the consequences of our choices? So much like, I don't know, I want to say this, Mary, much like when Debbie Ford said to me, hey, Cheryl, you think you're worried about what everybody else thinks, but you're really worried about what you think. Mary, it's really. You are legitimately acknowledging that I'm going to miss this place. This is going to be a big change, and you are going to miss it. But let me ask you this: have you lost anything in your life up till this point yet?
Yeah, actually I have. I've lost two things and that were very important to me in the last week.
Okay. And you're still here to talk about it, but have you lost any people? Have you lost a job, like something of sig- I mean,
I've lost both parents and aunts, uncles, and my next door neighbor's 28-year-old son. So
okay.
I get that piece.
And how did you survive the sadness, Mary?
Well, I think with elderly people, it is the release of the suffering.
Okay.
I think with the next door neighbor's son, it's very hard because I think I haven't processed it yet because it recently happened.
Okay. Okay. So my point is, and do you imagine that there's going to be anything great about the next place, that there's any relief in you that when you get to your next wonderful place that you love, do you imagine that there's going to be parts of you going, oh my God, I'm so glad I don't have that walk up anymore, or right? There's going to be things that you're going to love, and there's going to be things that you're going to feel sad about. The beauty of age is we learn that we actually survive grief. We learn how to host the sadness and integrate it into our lives. And that's what you'll do, Mary. There's no way on God's green earth that you can make a move and not feel sad. It's not going to happen. It shouldn't happen. Unless, of course, you're shut down or you become like a drug addict or you like, you know what I mean? Like you just like go unconscious. You'll deal with the sadness. But it'll be a lot easier to deal with if you find an awesome place for your soul in the next home that you choose for yourself. It'll be a lot less sad.
Correct. So spend the time on the visualization of
Absolutely, absolutely.
and you
And
might
keep
feel
affirming,
confident.
as Louise Hay would say, keep affirming the perfect place finds me. I'm so excited it's on its way. It finds me at the perfect time. All
Yeah, I
right.
think timing, yeah, perfect timing is, yeah, key. Yeah.
There you go. All right. Thanks, Mary. All right, Deborah, you're going to be the last one, sweetheart. So make it a good one. No pressure. You have to unmute. There you go. Nope. Unmute yourself, darling. There you
Hi
go.
there. Sorry for
Mike. That's okay.
that. Quick question. It's a big question. I mean, it's a bigger question, but I'm going to ask the abbreviated form.
Okay.
My mom is now by herself in the house that I grew up in since my dad passed. And my bottom line question is, how do you I need to work on all the things that we are talking about for myself.
Yes.
And I'm 61, so I have a lot of things to work on and get back on track because I have been working on a lot of these things since I was like 35 and got divorced. So I'm taking responsibility for me. My mom is not taking responsibility for herself.
Yeah.
And so she's living in a house that is way too big, that has stairs, and
Yeah.
she's just not making any plan. And she's been there already for 4 years now by herself. She
Yeah.
just quit working actually last year, but
How old is she?
she just turned 86, I believe. So
Okay.
she's in good shape, although her vision, she's got a lot of problems. That's, it's starting to become an issue and it could accelerate with the macular. But the bottom line is more that she's not making any plan for herself. She's living in a state of fear. Just staying in the house and
So
doesn't.
she doesn't leave the house at all?
Oh no! I mean, still living in the house.
Yes.
So this has been going on for 4 years.
So
Making.
Deborah, are you only I'm gonna just cut
Yep.
to
Go ahead.
the
Yep.
only child?
No, my sister lives in Massachusetts, but my sister was not involved at all when my father was declining, and I've got my own medical issues also.
Okay,
So go ahead.
so stop.
Yep.
So I'm going to use you for everybody's a couple things. First of all, we cannot control how people complete their lives. We
Right.
can't. And I mean, we just can't. And if your mother wants to die in that house because she fell down the stairs, that's her prerogative. I really hope that doesn't happen. And believe me, I know it's easier said than done, but I've lived this, so I understand. And number one, number two, please let's not be that kind of elder, everybody, right? Like let's make plans ahead of time so that we don't cause people to suffer. Also, if you have siblings, please, if you are the caregiver, if your sibling doesn't live near the parent, then ask them for financial support, getting people in there to help out or something. Do not take it on your own because siblings will gladly let you handle it. They just will. I've seen it a million times, and it's rare that a family is going to like meet and talk about how to share things unless they have a sibling who calls everybody to the carpet and says, we have to talk about this. And even then, it's difficult. So getting your sister involved in some way, even if it's, hey, send me money so that we can get a caregiver in to help mom. That's great. Looking at resources that are available. And Deborah, you're right. You need to make your own self-care a priority right now as well. And if you have your own health issue, like whatever, you just need to make your self-care a priority. So doing research up front about caregivers, local caregiver agencies, what kind of Because the reality is, what typically happens to elderly people who don't make plans is they have a medical emergency and then all bets are off and then they have no choice. Right? And all of a sudden, and if you don't have the finances, let me tell you something, 24/7 in-home care, most people, nobody can afford
Right.
that. It's way too expensive. So then it's going to fall on the shoulders of siblings. And you need to be on the phone with your sibling now saying, I am not going to be mom's sole caregiver. We need to make a plan now. And you also probably need to go to mom and say to her, I will not be your sole caregiver. Either we make a plan or you're on your own. Now, I'm cutting to the chase here, people. I mean, I know this doesn't sound gracious, and I don't mean to not be gracious, because ultimately we can't control how people end their lives, but we do have to take some agency back around making our own lives a priority and doing the research ahead of time. I feel like I got a PhD in elder care, honestly, this last year, my husband and I. Like, I know the pitfalls, I know that agencies, I know that in America right now, 90% of the people doing caregiving to elderly people are not English first speaking, caregivers. They're from other countries. I know that there is generational racism in this country where elderly people, it shows up when there are no filters as people get older and they've not done any personal work. It's very expensive, and that it falls on the hands of siblings, and that all siblings need to be involved. And you can't always make siblings do it. So it is a lot, Deborah. And if anything, thank you for giving me an opportunity to just use your conversation as a jumping off point. Hopefully, you've all heard like a little seed here or there when it comes to elder care that you can put in place now rather than later. Because, and I've done things like, I mean, I remember when my mom was alive and she didn't want a caregiver in the house. And I said to her, Mom, I love you. Here's the deal. I know you don't want to go to like a rehab facility. That is where you're going if we don't. Like, because here's what you don't think about. Oh, you can't get to the bathroom by yourself. Oh, you don't have a hospital bed. Like, oh, here's all these different things. And I began to educate her and she started to understand what was going on, but she still didn't like it. And I mean, we could do a whole series of Zooms just on elder care, couldn't we? Right?
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, I hope some of that is helpful, Deborah. And you can't take care of your mother if you don't take care of yourself. And it's going to mean drawing some really strong boundaries and asking for help and looking to see. Here's a little trick I learned. And I learned this with my father, who was a pain in the ass when he was alive. Didn't want anybody but my mother taking care of him. And my mother was like an angel. All you need to do is find, like, you got to get really strategic. Like, you find somebody who's just going to come in and like clean the house, and you got to find the right personality. And so you might have to go through a few people. And how you introduce people to having caregivers is you just let them come in for one or two little things. You make sure they're really nice. And when the parent gets along with them, before you knew it, my father was like begging for his nurse to come in every week because he liked her so much and he had such a good time with her. And we did a similar thing with my father-in-law as well. So there's little tricks of the trade, and someday we'll do that.
I'll share one quick trick is that because my mother was treating me like I was an ambulance for her, and I'm 45 minutes away and again have my own health challenges just to get myself. And I, when she did that once, and I'm also working still full time, and I told her I just had my eyes dilated and I couldn't come and get her. And because I was trying to get her to sign up for these other, the other types of transportation, even though she still drives, but she couldn't in this case. And that was what did it. She finally started to follow through and signed up for the other types of elderly
This
transportation.
is a great example. You know what that reminds me of? Back when my husband Michael was sick, very sick for 4 years. And I remember I finally went got into therapy with somebody who was specifically for caregivers, and she said to me, little white lies are sometimes good self-care. And
Yeah.
because
You feel bad, but
I didn't
it's.
want to lie. I always wanted to do the right thing. And boy, was she right. I mean, you didn't hear it here, people, but
No.
sometimes you've
Yeah.
got to be strategic. Anyway, thank you very much, Deborah.
Thank you.
Listen, thank you all for hanging in there with me, for like being on for this long. Thank you for just, helping me to see. I'll keep you all posted. I'm going to definitely do. If you think like watching a live coaching session for 30 minutes would be of interest to you, would you just like send me an email or say so in the chat? You can send an email to Cheryl@CherylRichardson.com. It'll get to me. And it seems to me that a podcast on these topics would be really like the real practical nature of these topics would be really helpful. And we're going to figure that out. Two of my dear producers are on this Zoom as well, or they'll be listening to the Zoom, and I'll keep you all posted, and I'll do another one of these. So we can continue with the conversation. Maybe I'll like pick a topic and like focus on ego versus soul, and or managing the mind, or whatever. Well, tell me what topics are like most hot for you. That would be really good to know, the top two or three topics, and I'll schedule another one. All right. Thank you, everybody, so much. This is recorded in the blog this week. I will put the recording in the blog so that you'll get it and you can listen to it at your leisure in the future. No worries at all. And thank you. Just thank you for showing up. I really appreciate it. Hi, Susan. I see you there. All right. We will all talk again soon. I love you all. Take good care of yourselves. All right. Enjoy your wisdom years, please. We'll be back in touch. I'll be back in touch.